The wall, the couch, the floor, I don't care, I say, grabbing at his shirt, tugging on the material. I feel mad with hunger, feral even, as I yank at his annoying buttons.
Rip it off,
he urges. I feel wild as I tug hard on the next button, then the next, till one pops, then lands on the floor in a plink. The sound sends a rush of heat between my thighs. I rip his shirt open the rest of the way, spreading my hands across his chest. He shudders, closing his eyes for a few seconds, savoring my touch. This thrills me. His reaction, the way he melts too when I touch him, how I light him up the way he does me. I've never experienced a connection like this before. He wants what I have to give, and that's so rare and so wondrous. And he wants it desperately. He jerks at the zipper of my jeans, then I grab at his. Soon my pants and underwear are on the floor, and he's carrying me to the couch. He sits, then unzips his jeans the rest of the way, freeing his cock. My mouth waters. I've missed you too, I say.
Show me. Get on my dick and show me how much,
he says, gripping the base of his cock and offering it to me. So bossy, I say as I straddle him and sink down. A tremble races through my whole body as I take him deep. Oh, God, I gasp.
Fuck.
He groans, letting his head fall back on the couch. It's too much and never enough. It's hot and passionate. We're fast and frenzied. He thrusts up into me, and I grind down on him, and I can't get enough of this man. This man who's shown up for me over and over again, who's come to my rescue so many times, then who let me help myself when I needed that most, only so he could find me again tonight. He's found me, and I don't ever want to lose him again. His hands curl tight around my hips as he lifts his face and smashes his lips to mine. It's a sloppy kiss, full of so much passion as his fingers trace my jaw and his tongue tangles with mine. And we come back together. It's needy and frantic, and when I come, he's right there after me, arms wrapped tight around me, lips whispering across mine. Back where we belong. A little later, after we straighten up and change, we're on the couch again. This time, though, we have a different mission. The list is spread out on the coffee table like it was the night Wes discovered it. Your turn to check this off, I say, handing him a pen. But he doesn't look away or turn toward the paper. His soulful brown eyes hold mine with reverence.
I really wanted to finish it with you.
Warmth floods my body. We're almost done. He takes the pen and slashes off number 8. Then he stares at the list, humming, seems deep in thought. What is it? I ask, eager to know what's on his mind.
Do you think you've been doing number 9 all along, celebrating your goodbyes?
My heart seizes, a tight fist, but then I breathe through it. The grief doesn't last long anymore, just a pang here or there, a dull ache now and then. Mostly, I feel the love. I felt it tonight before Wes showed up, then it carried on with him, changing shape, changing size into a new kind of feeling. I look down at the list. Maybe we have. Maybe that's what this list was all about after all. I take the pen from him and draw a line through number 9 and read the list out loud. 1. Have a one-night stand with a sexy stranger. 2. Overcome a fear. 3. Make a friend who's nothing like you. 4. Eat dessert for breakfast. 5. Take pictures of your fun times. 6. Volunteer. 7. Explore a new skill. 8. Dance in the park. 9. Celebrate your goodbyes. There's still one more item on the list, but it feels like something I'll be doing for a long time, so I leave it. Some things are just unfinished, and that's okay too. Or maybe I'm not entirely ready to say goodbye to this list, but I don't have to let it go. Not really. I can keep it with me for as long as I want to hold on to it.
Chapter 48. But can I have a ladder? Wesley. How am I supposed to choose? I stare at the cookie porn on Josie's tablet later that evening, unable to pick. All of them, I say, salivating at the Christmas cookie images.
Wes.
She chides me, leaning on the kitchen counter, scrolling through recipes on her tablet.
You can't pick them all.
I drop a kiss to her neck. Just like I want to fuck you in every way possible, I want all of these, too. She shivers, then shakes it off. All business again.
Pick three, then. Will that be enough for you?
She glances at the kitchen clock.
I don't even know if we can get the ingredients in time.
Of course we can, I say, then steal another kiss. It's still Monday night, but since Christmas is in 2 days, we need to get moving on this project. I tear myself away from kissing her to check out the tablet again, and I study the recipes.
Do you need me to turn on the text-to-speech?
She asks. I shake my head. Nah, recipes are easy enough. The way they're laid out and all, I love bullet points, I say. But then my mind whirs in another direction. But you could always read me something dirty. I'd happily listen to that. She gives me the flirtiest look ever, then says in a husky purr,
add peanut butter, softened butter, granulated sugar, light brown sugar, and salt to the bowl of a stand mixer fitted with the paddle attachment, or a large bowl if using a hand mixer. Beat on medium speed until creamed well.
And I can't pick right now. I yank off her leggings, lift her onto a stool, and help myself to her. After she comes on my face 5 minutes later, I stand, wipe my hand across my mouth and say, peanut butter blossoms. Then I add, also shortbread, because you only live once, and snowball cookies. After we clean up, we hightail it to the grocery store. When we get home, we go for another round. What can I say? Gotta make up for those few days without her. After, when we're lying in bed, I address the big thing. The thing I've been wanting to say for a long time. I turn to Josie. Her skin is still glowing, and her lips are still bee-stung as she slides her glasses back on. I didn't ask before, but I'm ready now. Would you stay? A smile teases the corner of her lips.
What do you mean, Wes?
It's said teasingly, like she doesn't know what I mean, when she does. I don't play games, though. I don't beat around the bush. Here, in San Francisco, with me, I say, strong and certain. Look, I know you're going to get that job you interviewed for today. I have no doubts.
It would be a great job,
she says, sounding so hopeful. I love that she's not playing it cool, that she's allowed herself to want. Stay then, whatever happens in January. If you turn down that job, stay. You can look for other jobs from here as easily as any place else. Stay. I say that beautiful word one more time. She smiles like a little minx.
Well, I was going to move in with Everly.
My jaw comes unhinged. What did you just say, woman?
We discussed it on Sunday, before you got your act together.
I stab the pillow with my forefinger. My act is together now. I want you here. And you can't pretend we're anything but excellent at living together.
We are pretty good at it,
she says playfully, still keeping me on my toes. I kiss her shoulder, then lay her a path of more kisses up to her ear, trying to convince her with my lips. But then I have a better idea, a fail-safe way to get her to say yes. I stop the path of kisses and meet her gaze. We can even turn your room under the staircase into a library. Her eyes sparkle.
Can I have a ladder in it?
You can have anything you want.
Sold.
In the morning, we do our favorite things. Fuck. Then bake. The kitchen is a mess of flour and chocolate and cookie dough. And the gorgeous, smart, feisty woman who is somehow willing to put up with me. That's the real holiday miracle. After she slides the last tray into the oven, then swipes her hands over the cake drawings on her apron, I haul her against me for another kiss. Mmm. You taste like sugar, I say.
Then you must really like my lips.
I love them, I murmur. And you. When I break the kiss, I scan the kitchen and the mess. There are measuring cups, bowls, and flour for miles. This will take a while to clean up. Why don't you lie down with a good book and read, and I'll clean. She arches a brow.
Are you even real?
I smile like a cocky fucker. Yep, I know how to take care of my woman. I am, and you deserve some time to read. But there's another reason at play, and since it's the season for being honest, I say. And I need to call my dad. She sets a hand on my shoulder.
You can do it.
She's right. I can. We talked about the things I need to say to him this morning while we were baking. It's time. When she leaves the kitchen, I pop in my AirPods, grab a sponge, and gear up. Like when I'm about to hit the ice, I zone in on three things right now. Focus, determination, and grit. I call my dad and he answers right away. Hey, son, good to hear from you. Merry Christmas Eve, he says. Merry Christmas Eve to you too, I say. And we make small talk about the holiday for a minute. But after that, I square my shoulders. Listen, I begin. Okay, he says with a touch of nerves in his voice. I appreciate everything you've done for me. My whole life, getting me tutors and tools for dyslexia, and making sure I could handle my homework and get decent enough grades, and getting me to hockey practice, buying me equipment, and getting me the best coaches. I am beyond grateful. Good. You deserve all that. I'm hearing a but. I draw a deep breath. I'm canceling the meal plan, and the performance coach too. Domingo's a good guy, but I don't need him. Dad's quiet for a long beat. That's rare. Then he says with genuine curiosity, why? They're so good for you. I wipe down more of the sugar on the counter to stay busy. I eat balanced already. I just don't want to be obsessed with calories. Sometimes I eat cookies, like right now. I made Christmas cookies with my girlfriend. Your girlfriend? So you are with her? It comes out a little like I knew it, but fact is he did know it. Yep, and she's not a distraction. She's incredible. She's supportive and kind and funny, and she's taught me to have fun, I say. Then I smile. Can't help it. Josie makes me feel that way. Lighter, easier, more carefree. Do you know what that's like? When you meet someone who makes you smile and laugh, it's better than shooting the winning goal. He scoffs lightly. Well, I'm glad you're happy, but you're a good dad. But you're too involved as an agent. I'm not firing you, but I am telling you I need you to back off. The way you're over-involved is honestly a distraction. Just be my dad and be my agent. But don't make me your project anymore, okay? He sighs. I only want the best for you, son. And you've given me the best. He sighs again, this time more heavily. But perhaps it's directed at himself. I overstepped, he says, plainly. You have? But it's nothing we can't fix. We can start over. You think so? I know so. He pauses, and I know this isn't easy for him. Hell, it's not easy for me, but it is necessary. His voice is tinged with some regret when he says, I've really only ever wanted the best for you. But I hear you. I've been pushy, and I'll try to back down. You can do it, I say encouragingly, like he to say to me. You're right. I can do it. He hesitates, but only to shift gears. Will you come to Christmas dinner? We're going to her brother's house earlier in the day, but dinner should work, so I say, yes, and I'm bringing my girlfriend. Tell Frida she's a woman in the t-shirt, and she'd better be nicer to her than she was the night she met her. I say goodbye and finish cleaning, feeling a whole lot lighter. Christian chews approvingly on a peanut butter blossom. These are even better than those cinnamon things you guys made the other month, he says, relaxing on his couch. The wreckage of Christmas morning gifts for 2.5-month-old twins scattered on the floor in front of the 10-foot-tall Douglas fir. As a baby in his arms mouths on some pacifier shaped like a bear, Christian stuffs another cookie in his mouth. The fact that he eats sweets with no obvious guilt is another thing I admire about him. I reach for one from the red and white striped cookie tin and pop it in my mouth. Yep, it tastes like zero guilt. When I finish it, I say, "You know what? You're right. We can bake."
"We're exceptionally good at following recipes,"
Josie says from her spot next to me. Her parents are here too. Christian nods toward his sister. "Are these Greta's recipes? I remember this one Christmas when the two of you made 7-layer brownies, and they were the best." Josie beams.
"Those were really good. Wes, we'll have to make those next."
"We will," I say. Christian leans back on the couch, shifts the baby to his other arm. The last time Christian brought up baking, he could barely remember his sister liked to putter around in the kitchen. Now he's remembering details and sharing them. It's a welcome shift. From across the couch, Josie's mom meets my gaze. "Wesley, tell us more about you. What do you like to do for fun?" Easiest question ever. I drape an arm around Josie, squeezing her shoulder. "Mostly, I like to spend time with your daughter. That's what makes me happiest." Josie's mom tilts her head, knitting her brow like she's trying to figure me out, then says, "I can't think of a better answer." In the early afternoon, we make our way toward the door to head to Sonoma and see my dad. But before we go, Josie's mom pulls her aside. "There's something I have for you. A gift, if you will."
"What is it?"
Josie asks. "Come with me." I watch as they head down the hall, wondering what this gift could be.
Chapter 49. Salty Sweet Tears. Josie. This isn't ominous at all. My mom hardly ever pulls me aside, but she has this mom look on her face, like she wants to tell me something very important. Tension winds through me as she leads me into the guest room where she's been staying, then shuts the door. The sound of it clicking freaks me out. Yes, she said she had a gift, but I can't escape this queasy feeling. "What is it, Mom? Are you sick? Is something going on?" All I can think is that she's next. I've lost someone I love already, and I don't want to go through that again. She frowns sympathetically. "I didn't mean to scare you. I'm not sick. I'm great, and I have something for you. It's from..." She draws a breath, a fortifying one it seems. "My sister." My pulse stops. I can barely breathe. "What do you mean?" I stammer out. "When my sister wrote you the list, she gave something to me too. Before," my mom says in careful bites, like this is hard for her. "That's why I kept asking you from time to time if you had started the list, because she wanted you to have something when you finished it. I don't know if you finished it, but I have a feeling that you have." She pauses, like she can read list finishing in my eyes. I'm not sure she can, or if she just figured 2 years was about right for me to make it through. "Am I right?" "I've finished 9 items of the top 10. I still have number 10, but 10 isn't something you finish. 10 is an everyday kind of thing, so I feel like I'm being honest to Greta's memory when I say, yes. Also, I want what my mother has badly." She spins around, heads to her suitcase, and takes a letter from the inside pouch. She carries it in both hands like it's precious, something excavated from an archaeological dig that she must handle with great care. I stare at it. I can't look anywhere but at a simple cream envelope, and then the letters on the front. The most familiar handwriting ever spells my name. I want to snatch it, but I take it carefully and hold it tight to my chest. "Thank you." The letter whispers to me the whole time I'm at Frida's house. It taunts me, saying I'm here. But I focus on meeting Wesley's dad for the first time and Frida for the third time. Even though we've, of course, already met, Wesley reintroduces me to her, saying,
"Like I said, this is my girlfriend."
And Frida is cordial to me for the first time ever. Wesley's father is friendly enough, too, but I love Wesley's sister immediately. She welcomes me with open arms, and so does her girlfriend and their dog. But I think about the letter my mom gave me the whole time. I don't dare open it until I'm home and safe. Hours later, after we've driven back from Sonoma and pulled into the garage, I'm desperate to rip it open. I told Wes about it on the drive up, and told him, too, that I was going to wait. We go inside, take off our shoes, and head straight to the living room. I fished the letter out of my bag, and it's like I've slipped out of time, like I'm floating above my body as I stare at the envelope one more time. It's not often that you get a letter from the next life.
Do you want me to leave so you can read it alone?
He asks, his tone gentle. I shake my head. I want you to stay. He squeezes my hand, then lets go. I close my eyes, breathing in the quiet stillness on Christmas night. When I open them, I slide my finger under the flap and read. My darling Josie, by now you've finished the list. Knowing you, you've probably researched it thoroughly, done your homework, studied every single item. Am I right, baby? Or am I right? Of course I'm right, because I know you. And I hope after taking on this top 10 list, you know yourself a little better. The person I've been so lucky to know for your whole life. A woman who's funny, kind, bold, bright, caring, and maybe now a little more daring. You might be wondering why I left this list for you. Was it a way for us to stay connected once I'm gone? Is it a way for you to honor my memory? Please, it's none of those things. I gave this to you because I've lived exactly the life I wanted. So much of that is because of the one thing I did that's at the top of my own list of no regrets. Spending so much time with you. You made me so very happy in this life, and I'm sure I'll carry that joy with me into the next one. With so much love in all our lives, Greta. I don't know how long I cry, but it's long enough to go through a whole box of tissues, to turn my face red and splotchy, to soak through Wes's shirt with my salty tears as he holds me and strokes my hair. But they're happy tears, or maybe they're the happiest, the kind that only come once you've made it through the sad moments and come out on the other side. Chapter 50. That said, Josie. The library's open the next day, since lots of patrons like to hang out with books that they can borrow during the holidays. As Wes drives me to work, he's seriously the best chauffeur with or without a shirt. My phone pings with an email. The envelope icon winks at me on the top of the screen. A promise full of hope. It's from the library in Petaluma. This might be it, I say. Then I tell him who it's from.
Open it right now,
he says as he pulls up in front of my little library and turns off the engine. I only have a few more days here. I click on it, and it takes all of 3 seconds for my heart to sink. It's the "that said" in the email. It's one of those turns of phrases that means a rejection is coming. We enjoyed the interview with you immensely, and you were one of our top candidates, but that said, we had many exemplary candidates for the information specialist role. We wish you the best in your job search. I hate that I want to cry.
You'll get the next one,
he says, reaching for my hand and squeezing it. I nod, then fight off the disappointment welling in my chest and go inside. It's hard to focus on work, even though I try. It's hard to focus on anything but the ticking clock, especially when we gather for our last trivia night after my shift, a farewell party for me. You've done wonders, Talia says. Perhaps something will come up in the future. I hope, I reply, and I do, even though the odds don't seem to be in my favor. The next morning, I keep that focus on hope. In the afternoon, my phone trills as I'm finishing up a display of the best edge-of-your-seat romantic thrillers in audio. The Violet Delia Foundation for Library Digital Empowerment is calling. Talia's walking past me, so I wave it her way. Look, I croak out, barely able to accept the call. Answer it now, she says, sounding nearly as excited as I am, but a lot more demanding. They don't call you unless it's good news. That's the first fact of interviewing, but I'm so nervous, it takes me 2 tries to actually take the call. Hi, this is Josie. This is Violet Delia. It's good to hear your voice again. It's great to hear yours, I say. I hope I haven't caught you at a bad time, she says. Oh my God, there's no bad time when you're calling. I'm available, I say, bright and upbeat and full of double meaning. I hope she's picking up what I'm putting down. Good. I hope you're available for this, too. I want to make you an offer. My dream job. I'm about to get my dream job. I'm a pinball machine, whirring with a high score as she continues. We love what you've done at the branch in the Upper Haight with the grant, the training that you've done, the work with the Digitization Center, and the efforts to educate patrons on media literacy are exactly why this foundation exists, and we want you to keep doing it. My hand flies to my mouth. This is too much. This is too good to be true. This is everything. I would love to. I was hoping you'd say that. There's only one little stipulation. I tense, then say with some trepidation, "What is it?" "The job is in Boston."
Chapter 51. The Airport Goodbye. Wesley. Boston, I repeat, like saying the name of the city will change the situation.
Boston,
she says in the corridor after my game that night. A game she came to. A game we won. A game I scored a goal in. Then I skated over to the stands and blew her a kiss. Best night ever. Except, now it's not. Boston, I say again. This time heavily. I'm too shocked to say anything more. This is the last thing I had expected. But Josie is smiling, like she has a trick up her sleeve.
Wes,
she whispers. Yeah?
It's another 3-month gig. It's only 3 months. I won't even be gone that long.
Oh. Fuck yes. I can breathe again. 3 months is nothing. 3 months will pass in the blink of an eye.
Right?
She sounds so excited. I'll be traveling and playing, and you'll be working.
But not just in Boston, but a couple other libraries in New England, in Providence and Amherst, too. They want me to do the job at a handful of branches. It's a dream job.
She says, but I can hear the worry in her voice, even though she's not asking my permission to take it. She wants to know if I'll wait for her, like I'd do anything else. I grab her hand. You're taking it, right?
You'd do long distance?
For 3 months? Baby, I'd do it for a year for you. Hell, I'd do it for as long as it took for you to come back. And I want you to get on that plane and know I'm waiting for you whenever you return, I promise. She lets out a relieved breath. And I'm glad I could give her what she needs. Certainty in us. The first day of the new year, I put my money where my mouth is. I drive her to the airport, walk her to security, then tuck a strand of chestnut hair behind her ear. We've got this. She gives me the saddest smile that's chased with a tiny bit of hope.
It'll go by so fast.
We've made plans to talk every night, to text, to sext. To FaceTime. I'm going to see her as soon as I can, too. We've worked out details for a quick overnight at the beginning of February. I won't have much time, but I can squeeze it in between road trips. Then, another few weeks later, I'll fly her home to me for a weekend in early March. It'll be easy. So easy. It'll be almost the same as having her here. Lies. Sweet little lies. But I have to keep telling them to myself. What else can I do? I press a tender kiss to her forehead, inhaling her cinnamon scent, letting it go to my head one more time. My chest aches. It hollows out, and I can't stand that she's leaving so soon after we've started. But I also know I'll wait for her to return for as long as I have to. I brush my fingers down her cheek, along her jaw, and then lift her face so I can look into those gorgeous blue eyes. I'm so in love with you, and I'm never going to let you forget it a single day that we're apart. Her smile is bright now.
Be careful what you wish for. You're going to get so many letters.
Bring it on. I kiss her one more time, a poignant goodbye kiss that has to carry us through. When we break it, she waves sadly, then turns around and heads through security. I stay till she's on the other side, walking farther and farther away from me. As I watch her go, I know with crystal clarity, I have to find a way to get her back.
Chapter 52. Hard nips and hard days. January 1st. Dear Wesley, I'm writing this on the plane and in Comic Sans MS on my tablet. You can listen to it or read it. By the way, did you know that real plane seats are tiny? You probably don't because you have those cushy, fabulous seats with so much room, but I like to remind you now and then of how the rest of us live. I'm keeping busy on the plane, trying not to miss you by writing and reviewing my notes for my first training session. It's Gasp on Friday. The best part? I'll be teaching some high school students about the different resources we have available for research. I'm a big fan of the internet myself. My favorite things to research? Top 5 positions for mind-blowing sex. Don't worry, I won't share those tips. Here's a fun fact for you, though. We've tried them all, but practice makes perfect, as they say. Maybe tonight, when I get to the rental apartment, I'll Google how to ride your man's cock like a wild cowgirl. Love, your dirty girl, Josie.
My very dirty girl. We should have a viewing party when you get to that rental. I'll be waiting. Wes.
January 13th. Dear Wesley, trying to wipe the freshly fucked grin off my face as I head into my third week of work, you're as voracious with long-distance sex as you are in person, and as I walk into the library in the freezing cold of New England, seriously, this place is Antarctica levels, and I think my nipples are perma-hard here. I'm still thinking of the things you said last night, and the way you looked. Have I mentioned I love FaceTime? They should rename it FuckTime, though. Love, Josie.
Josie, what did you say? I was thinking of your perma-hard nipples and my brain went offline. Also, I'm about to get on that cushy plane for a road trip. It's to the East Coast, but the wrong part. The big toe of Florida. If I were any closer, I'd sneak off and see you. Not just because of the nips, though. Because I fucking miss you every day. And as much as I love fuck time, I want the real thing. Love, Wes.
January 21st. Dear Wesley, I have an intern. She's amazing. Her name is Penelope. She's a mom to a 10-year-old boy, and she went back to school at age 32 to get her master's degree. I adore her. She loves shoes, makeup, books, and her kid, though not in that order, of course. We're working on the digitization initiatives together, and yesterday, we nerded out over metadata and how to best organize a catalog. It was heaven. Then we went to a taco shop with her son, who loves hockey but the Boston team, and I asked them to turn on your game, and I seriously went wild when my boyfriend scored a goal. Penelope said, "That's a boyfriend goal for you." That sort of felt apropos to the game and also to you. Love, Josie.
Josie, got back to the hotel room late and crashed hard. The thought of you watching my game is still the hottest thing ever. You better have worn my jersey. Only a few more weeks now till I can see you again. P.S. I called Talia to see if she needed help at any more Friends of the Library fundraisers, so I'll be serving pancakes again next weekend. XO. Wes.
Dear Wesley, and I love you even more for volunteering at the library. I will reward you with several extra blowjobs. Wait. That's a reward for me, too, given how much I love your dick. Josie.
Josie, my dick loves you, too, so it's a reward for both of us. Wes.
February 4th. Dear Wesley, I feel terrible doing this, but my boss asked me to lead a seminar the day you were going to come visit. She needs me to fill in because the other librarian is sick. Flu season is the worst, but I'm sturdy and I haven't so much as had a sniffle. I'm sorry. I hate long distance. I miss you. But I passed a record shop the other day and I popped in and asked them what someone who likes Ben Rogers, the Good Neighbors Band, and the Last Shadow Puppets would like. And well, surprise! The record shop in Hayes Valley should have dropped it off for you. It's a consolation prize. Josie.
Josie. I'm listening to this new mini mansions right now. I can't stop thinking of you. But that's every day. Wes.
February 14th. Dear Wesley, 6 dozen pink roses for the number of weeks left till I return to San Francisco. They're perfect. Love, Josie.
Josie, so are the chocolates you sent from Elodie's. I had one. I'm savoring them. P.S. It was great talking to you last night. I'm glad you're loving it there. Wes.
February 15th. Dear Wesley, I do love it. I really do. But I love you too, and I wish I could see you. I had a hard day today. Your Josie.
Chapter 53. The Bright Spot. Wesley. It's 6 in the evening, and we've beaten Philly in an afternoon game on their turf when I finish reading her letter. I'm heading out of the home team's arena to the Sea Dogs bus, but I've got 5 minutes before we go, so I duck down a quiet hall and dial her number, since she clearly needs to talk, and I want to be there. Why did you have a bad day? I ask when she answers.
Because everything went wrong,
she says, frustration in her tone, but not like she's mad at the world. More like she's upset she couldn't fix everything.
The screen froze during my class, which wasn't the worst thing because I knew the material, but it was still challenging. I don't love improv, as you know, but I handled it. Then later, I was trying to help a patron digitize some home movies, and the computer ate one of his movies, and he yelled at me.
I growl at that asshat in Boston. It's not your fault.
I know. It was just a computer glitch, but he was angry and wanted to lash out. He'd been telling me he was getting a divorce and wanted to copy over these old movies before his wife took them. I figured he was going through something.
It's no excuse to be mean, I say. If I were there, I'd give him a piece of my mind. I hear her smile as she says,
I know you would.
She pauses, then soldiers on.
But it was one of those days where everything went wrong. Another guy was waiting to pick up a book, and it was taking a while to find it, so he oh-so-helpfully yelled at me that his taxes paid my salary. Our circulation software went down, and it was like one thing after another. But there was one bright spot.
Yeah, I say, eager to hear her good news.
There was a woman in the library who's been living out of her car recently, and she's trying to transition out of homelessness. Her name is Justine, and she was sniffling while working at one of the terminals, and people were looking at her. It's so hard, because other patrons don't always want the unsheltered and those less fortunate there, but it's part of what we do. We serve the community, and that includes everyone.
Her heart is so big. I love that about the library and you. So tell me, what did you do?
I gave her some tissues and asked if she needed help on the computer.
Such a simple, practical way to help someone. What did she need?
She was trying to apply for housing and struggling with the application, so I sat down and worked with her for an hour, and she was telling me her story and how she lost her home when she was laid off, but she had just gotten a job at a roadside diner, so things are starting to look up for her a bit.
Josie lets out a long breath, filled with obvious relief and hope.
And I was glad I was there for her.
You had the tools. Doesn't always happen, but when it does, it's great to be able to help someone in the exact way they need.
Exactly.
She takes a beat and sighs somewhat contentedly.
Thanks. I just needed to share. It was hard, but it was fine. The job is hard sometimes, just like yours. How was your game in Philly?
We won, I say.
And you take the train to DC tonight?
Yep, I say. And the trip's too tight to squeeze in a visit. But then I start doing the math a second time. A few hours later, I send her a text saying, I'm at your door. Then I knock on it. It's past her bedtime, but she must have her phone on since, 30 seconds later, she's swinging open the door. She's wearing fuzzy jammies with penguin illustrations on them, a white t-shirt that slopes off her shoulder, and her glasses. She's never been more beautiful as she blinks, parts her lips, then flings herself at me.
You're here? How the hell are you here?
You had a bad day, I say, as if the answer's obvious. Because really it is. I wanted to see if you needed another bright spot. She tugs my sweater, pulling me inside her warm apartment and out of the bitter cold night.
You're my bright spot.
I didn't grab the last flight out of Philly to Boston for sex, but I know, too, that what she needs right now is connection. So I gather her close, hold her face, and kiss her senseless. It's a kiss that says I'll do whatever it takes to make her days better, to show her she's special, to hang the moon for her. Right now, though, she doesn't want the moon and the stars. She wants me. Josie pulls me to the bed, and our clothes vanish in seconds. Then, I'm inside her. Everything is right in the world for a few delirious, mind-numbing moments as we come back together. Limbs tangled, breath hot and fast, skin slick with sweat. Words like miss you, need you, and love you are traded as if their store is infinite. I suppose it is with her. After, she curls up against me.
I needed that.
I could tell. I want to lift your spirits.
Orgasms do that, but really it's you,
she says. Then she sighs heavily as she settles into the crook of my arm.
I love my job, Wes. Even on the bad days, it's everything I want to do. But I miss you so much it hurts.
My chest hollows out, aching in a fresh, new way. I hate that she's hurting, that this is hard. It's hard for me, too. It's painful not to see her like I did in San Francisco. At first, her letters seemed too happy, too perfect. But she's human after all, and it's a strange relief to know she's struggling like I am. I wish I could do something about it. But she's doing all she can, applying for jobs in San Francisco that might start when she's done with this assignment. All I can do is reassure her that I'm waiting, and wanting, and loving. You'll be back soon, I say, and I try to remind myself that that's all that matters. Especially since time keeps unwinding for us. Before the sun is even up, I'm out of there, catching a crack of dawn commercial flight to DC. Up in the air, I'm staring out the window, wishing we weren't so far away. But soon she'll be back. That's what I keep telling myself. That's what I have to believe. One day in mid-March, my phone rings as I'm heading to my empty bedroom for a pregame nap. Josie's name flashes on the phone. Weird. She doesn't usually call me during her workday. It's 2 on the East Coast. I answer right away. Hey, baby, what's going on?
Hey.
She sounds cheery, but also wary. My chest tightens with worry. I cut to the chase. What's wrong? You seem off.
I have good news and bad news.
My gut sinks. I brace myself as she continues.
The foundation asked me to stay on, permanently, out here in Boston.
I stop and grab the wall as the floor buckles under me. Of course I knew something like this could happen. Of course it could happen to me too, and I could be asked to move. But somehow I didn't think that her dream job could be across the country from me forever. What do you want to do? I ask evenly. She's quiet for a beat, pensive.
I really don't know.
I lean against the doorway, staring into the room under the staircase. And all at once I know what's next for me. When do they want you to decide?
Sometime next week.
That should be enough time. Chapter 54. Mic drop. Wesley. Nothing is getting in my way tonight. Not the score, not the opponent, not a single thing. The second I hop over the boards in the third period in the game, I'm lasered in on the puck more than ever. The score is tied. All night it's been a tight, tense game against the Las Vegas Sabres on our home ice. It's March, and every game matters. This one especially. I hunt for that puck like a sniper, chasing after it on the ice, jostling past Sabres defenders who want to take me down. Not tonight, Sabres. Not tonight. I'm single-minded, a man on a mission. Every time Asher or Alexei flip the puck to me, I narrow in on the goal, searching for a shot. I miss one, then another one's blocked. The game's locked up 1-1 when my shift's over. I park myself on the bench, down some water, and stare at the action like a horse with blinders on. Then I see it. The way their goalie's got a tiny blind spot. If I can slap the puck in just a little more to the left. When coach tells the second line to get back out there, I jump over the board so fast, hurtling into the action. Asher's on the puck right away, and I fly down the ice, adrenaline coursing through me as he races, the stick a blur of motion. But but he's jammed up near the net, and he whips around, flicking the puck to me. I narrow in on the blind spot, take aim, and fire. It flies right past the goalie, landing beautifully in the net. I punch the chilly air. My teammates clap my back. I imagine Josie cheering till she loses her voice at a taco shop with her librarian friend. There are 5 more minutes to play, and the game's not in the bag yet. But if we hold on, I've secured my goal for tonight. The clock winds down with the Sabres trying but failing to score on Max, and the horn blares. Tick, tick, boom plays in the arena. The game-winning goal is mine, and as soon as I reach the end of the tunnel, I scan it for Everly. She's waiting for us, polished and put together in a pantsuit. I march right up to her. I want to take point tonight. Let me talk to the press. She beams, then mimes making a check mark. Done. 5 minutes later, I'm in the media room. Pads off, jersey on, surrounded by the press. Local reporters, hockey bloggers, the TV station, podcasters, and the national sports network that carries the game. I've had media training. I know how to give the kind of bland answers that can never bite you in the ass. Just happy to help the team. Everyone played hard tonight. Just doing my part. I've got those chestnuts ready. So when the first reporter asks about the game-winning goal and how it positions us at this point in the season, I say into the mic, I'm happy to help the team, but I don't actually want to talk about the game tonight. A sports reporter in the front row tilts her head and lifts her phone higher, recording me. Everly arches a brow from her spot by the door. I'm seated at a table on a riser surrounded by a dozen members of the press, and I'm counting on them to do their part, to give me the help that I need. But first I have to do my part.
What do you want to talk about then?
The reporter in the front row asks. I square my shoulders. The fans, I begin. And the faces of the reporters are mostly disappointed. They probably figure this is nothing they haven't heard before. We have great fans, and yada yada, and we do. We have great fans, I begin. I practice what to say at home. I recorded myself speaking into my phone. I worked the ideas over. I listened to the recordings again and again and memorized what to say, because I don't want to fuck up this chance. We have the best fans. They show up for game after game. I wave my arm in the direction of the rink, which was packed for all 3 periods. It's been packed all season long. They fill this place, and I know I speak for the entire Sea Dogs organization when I say we're seriously grateful for the way they support us. I pause, take a fueling breath, and march on. And since you all support this city so well when it comes to games, I want to ask you to support the city in other areas too. I started volunteering at a local animal rescue, Little Friends, last fall. It's life-changing, helping them help animals find homes. And there's so many great opportunities to volunteer in this city. A homeless shelter, beach cleanup, giving rides to seniors. I take a breath. No one is stopping me. No one will. Because athletes are lucky. They have a platform afforded by uncommon talent. And sometimes you need to use it for good. And for your own good. Fortunately, they're one and the same right now. Or my personal favorite, the library. Do you know how underfunded most libraries are? I didn't know that for a while, but I've learned that in the past few months by volunteering at some of their pancake fundraisers. I pause, letting that sink in. Yeah, libraries still have to resort to pancake fundraisers to make enough money for their services, which is great on the one hand because I love pancakes. There's a collective murmur in the media room. But it's a shame, because the library has a lot of great services, and services that mean a lot to me personally because... I pause, but only for a second or two. Only because I've never said this out loud in public, and it's not because I'm ashamed. It's because there's never been a need. But there's a need now, so I offer up a part of myself so the public can see another side to this athlete. A more personal one. I'm dyslexic, and libraries are doing amazing things to help everyone learn to read. They have some great initiatives going on, from offering audiobooks to text-to-speech to this really cool technology that reads a book to you like the sentences or words on a karaoke screen. But what they're also doing at this branch in the Upper Haight is something called Your Next 5 Reads. I say, and I'm on a roll. This is like flying down the ice in a breakaway. a clean, open shot. If you like George R.R. Martin, or if you give a pig a pancake, or if you're into classics like To Kill a Mockingbird, or books by S.A. Cosby, Kristen Hanna, or Anna Huang, there are recs for everyone, whether you read with your eyes or ears or have the computer read it to you. And to support the city's library's initiatives, I'm going to donate a dozen headphones to every branch of the library in the city of San Francisco. The boxes should arrive tomorrow. I stop, give a smile, then lean into the mic. And if you've got a few extra bucks, maybe give it to one of these libraries. If not, go ask a librarian to suggest your next 5 reads. And thanks for coming tonight. I walk out. 2 days later, I pull up to the little library on a Friday morning. Talia emailed me late last night and begged me to stop by. I don't want to presume it's anything but chatting about the volunteer work I've been doing. But I also want to presume everything. I head inside and find her on the second floor. The second she sees me, she claps. Eddie does too. I wave my hands for them to stop, meaning it. Stop, seriously. But she shakes her head. We've been inundated. Everyone's been inundated, but especially this branch since Josie started your next 5 reads here. Everyone is writing in and asking for book recs. Talia's inbox is horrifying, Eddie seconds, and he's smirking. Sorry, not sorry, I say dryly. Oh, you'd better not be sorry. I used the horror of my inbox to secure funding from the city. Have I mentioned donations have gone through the roof since Mr. Hockey became Mr. Library? Sunlight spreads in my chest, warming every inch of me. Yeah? She nods. And I've hired someone to manage it. Shit. Fuck. No. That wasn't the plan, that wasn't the point. I mean, that's great and all, but there's one person who should do that instead. Before I can even sputter out, no, hire Josie, that was my plan. Talia says, would you like to be the one to tell my new hire that she has a permanent job here?
Chapter 55, Top 5 List, Josie. I'm helping Justine find some reliable sources on how to make the leap from working at a diner to working at a fine dining establishment when my phone buzzes with a text, Wesley's chime sound. 1 second. I say, then steal a glance at the text from my boyfriend.
Look at your email.
All I want to do is click on my email, but I need to finish with Justine. 5 minutes later, I peel myself away, slipping behind the desk next to Penelope to check my phone. It's been lit up since Wesley's speech the other night, a speech that shocked me and brought me to gloriously happy tears, proud tears. Patrons here heard about it, our donations increased a little bit, and the Boston team donated headphones too, following Wes's lead. My heart stutters as I read the first line.
Top 5 things for you to do. 1. Pick out your hottest librarian clothes. 2. Pack your bags. 3. Go to the airport. 4. Find a hockey player to collect your suitcase to take home. 5. Start your fully funded new job at the library near your home.
I gasp, shuddering out a shocked breath. My eyes widen, and I read it again and again. What's going on? Did you get a coupon for deals on shoes? The question comes from Penelope. Better. It's from Wes. I got a job in San Francisco. Penelope beams, then sweeps out an arm toward the door. Go! 2 weeks later, I shuffle off the plane in San Francisco as if I've drunk 10 espressos. Every cell is buzzing. I'm amped up. I can't wait to race down the jetway, then fly along the concourse. But first, I have to get off this plane. It takes as long as the Pleistocene era, but eventually I make it to the jetway, and then I run. Past the gate, down the concourse, toward security, through the doors, and into Wes's arms on the other side. He scoops me up in a koala hug.
You did it.
No, you did it. I kiss him again and again. You did.
Nope.
Then he shrugs and smiles.
Okay, we did.
The funding made it possible for Talia to make my old job a regular one, where I can manage the Your Next 5 Reads and also the library's digital efforts like I did before. I didn't want to leave the foundation in the lurch, but I didn't have to. Penelope is taking the permanent job they'd offered me in Boston. With that behind us and the future ahead of us, Wes takes me to the charming townhouse where I've laughed, cried, and loved. The second he pulls into the garage, it feels just like that. Home. I'm ready to race up the stairs and reconnect with him, but once we're in the foyer, he says,
"Remember that promise I made you?"
"Which one?" He reaches for my hand.
"I'll show you."
He takes me to my old room under the stairs and swings the door open. I gasp. He's turned it into a library. Gleaming white walls are filled with shelves and books. Fresh pillows line the window seat. And best of all, there's a ladder resting against the shelves. I tug him close to me, against the ladder, and kiss the breath out of him. He's always been the most generous person I've ever known, but to put himself out there like he did the other week? He's not just my boyfriend. He's the man I want to spend the rest of my life with. But first things first. Will you fuck me on this ladder? I feel like this belongs on a list somewhere after all.
Our new list,
he says, then fulfills a brand new fantasy. Epilogue, number 10, Josie. As I settle into my new, old job at the little library next to the fire station in the Upper Haight, I feel both like an explorer in San Francisco and like a regular. When I first arrived here back in the fall, I connected instantly with the city. San Francisco is a vibrant tapestry of cultures and experiences. It's a little like a new book. You crack it open and discover a story on every page. When our schedules align, Wes and I explore the city's neighborhoods, from the postcard charm of Chinatown to the edgier vibes of the Mission District. We go to bookstores and we check out night markets, picking up some of Maeve's lamps to decorate our place. It's not quite black and chrome now. It has a little more color. Tonight, though, it's time for that cocktail mixing class at last. We're taking it with our friends. We go to Sticks and Stones, a bar the guys on the team like. We join Max and Asher at the sleek silver counter. Miles is here, too. He's a center on the team, and he's started hanging out with the guys lately. He's both sarcastic and thoughtful, and that combo seems to keep the guys on their toes. Everly and Maeve are here, too, and so is Fable, as the owner, a friendly guy named Gage, guides us through how to mix an old-fashioned. Everly scoffs at Max's efforts to mix in bourbon. He looks amused as he stirs, but then the famously grumpy goalie turns to her with a stern look.
"What is it, Sunshine? Got a tip for me on my cocktail?"
Sunshine? I look to Wes, whispering. He calls her Sunshine? Wes shrugs.
Evidently.
Not at all, Everly says with a bright smile. I'm just enjoying learning all about your new skills.
You're surprised I can mix a drink?
She gestures to his face. I'm surprised you're not scowling.
Consider me shocked, too.
Miles weighs in.
Same here,
Asher adds.
And I have to agree,
Wes adds. Looks like it's unanimous, Everly says. Max harumphs, almost like he's been caught red-handed being ungrowly. He resumes mixing, and I keep wondering what's up with the two of them. But I'll find out another time. For now, I shake my cocktail glass, the ice clinking against the metal, and I'm happy, surrounded by friends who feel like family, and with my guy by my side. A few weeks later. The view. Seriously, the view. A little to the left, maybe, I say. Wes adjusts the frame and moves it slightly on the wall, then lifts the hammer again and smacks the nail behind it.
I think you just like watching me being handy.
He drawls. Maybe, I say. I mean, the arm porn is good from where I sit. He finishes hanging the artwork we both picked out, then asks,
Is this good?
It's perfect, I say, then pat the couch cushion. Now come join us. He walks over to the sofa and flops down next to me and our newest addition.
Hey, pancake.
Wes says, then nuzzles the cutie, a cattle dog mix we adopted from Little Friends. He's item number one on our new list, which we're still building, but we have two items on it so far. 10 things to do with your love. 1, adopt a dog. 2, make a home. We've crossed off number 1. We're busy working on two, and the art on the walls is part of that. We framed the original list from Aunt Greta with all but number 10 crossed out. Now, he wraps an arm around me, and we enjoy the view of our new art together. Number 10 has always been something that shouldn't be crossed out. It's something you should do every day. It's something we do for each other. 10. Make someone happy. The end. Want to know what happens next for Josie and Wesley? For a bonus scene about their life together, go to www.subscribepage.com/theboyfriendgoalbonus. Dear listener, Wesley's experience with dyslexia and the way he identifies himself primarily as a person with dyslexia and at the end as a dyslexic is based on extensive research into dyslexia, as well as insight and interviews from people living their best lives with dyslexia. Ultimately, everyone's experience of dyslexia and how they talk about it is unique to the individual, as are their choices for the tools and technology they may use to navigate it. Wesley's strategies and feelings about reading and the tools he uses to read were informed by Lauren's conversations with people living with dyslexia and the stories they shared with her. In addition, Wesley's choice to usually identify himself with person-first language, such as saying, "I have dyslexia," was informed both by research into preferred language, but also the backstory she created for him and the media training he would have as an athlete today. However, at the end, when he's speaking to the press, he specifically says, "I'm dyslexic." That was a deliberate choice, as his goals in that moment are to be intensely personal about this aspect of himself. And this felt like the most personal and intimate way for him to phrase the information he's sharing. This choice was also informed by her conversations with people who have dyslexia, and the way they often refer to themselves by simply saying, "I'm dyslexic." However, Josie specifically uses person-first language, "he has dyslexia," rather than "he's dyslexic" in talking about his dyslexia. People with dyslexia often land on both sides of the conversation, as to the language used, so her choice in mixing it up at the end was intentional and based on conversations with people in the community. Lauren is grateful to her sensitivity readers for combing over this manuscript and helping her to present this side of his character authentically. Thank you deeply to Jacqueline and Bree, as well as Kate and Grace. Any mistakes are entirely the author's own. Lauren's goal was not to write a story about someone learning to live with dyslexia or learning to love in spite of it. Her goal was to show positive representation and write a love story that happened to have a hero with dyslexia in it. She hopes she has succeeded, and she thanks you for taking the time to read this story.
Lauren asked Jacqueline, one of her sensitivity readers, to compile a list of resources for this title, and we are pleased to share this with you here. According to the Yale Center for Dyslexia, individuals with dyslexia have difficulty with reading fluency, spelling, and learning a second language. However, these difficulties are not related to their overall intelligence. In fact, people with dyslexia are often fast and creative thinkers with strong reasoning abilities. According to the Yale Center for Dyslexia, dyslexia is very common, affecting 20% of the population and representing 80 to 90% of individuals with learning disabilities. The following resources may be helpful for people with dyslexia or those who want a better understanding of it. 1. State AT Resource Centers. Each state, the District of Columbia, and each U.S. territory has state grant-funded assistive technology, AT, programs that provide AT demonstrations and loans. For more information about your state program and resources they may have that can support individuals with dyslexia, go to www.at3center.net/state-at-programs. 2. Bookshare. Bookshare is an ebook library that has a huge collection of audiobooks and ebooks, including textbooks and popular and acclaimed titles. The library is for people who have difficulty processing or comprehending printed text, seeing text in books or on a screen, or who have difficulty physically managing books or reading devices. Individuals can gain access to Bookshare after a professional with specific expertise, such as a teacher, librarian, assistive technology professional,
reading specialist, or occupational therapist confirms that the individual has a qualifying condition, like a learning or reading disability, such as dyslexia. Find out more at www.bookshare.org. 3. Don Johnston. Don Johnston is the creator of learning tools that support individuals with different learning styles and abilities. They provide free webinars on topics such as dyslexia and AT solutions that can be of benefit. Their products include Snap and Read, a reading support tool that reads text aloud, simplifies text, translates to more than 100 languages, and provides highlighting and note-taking supports. They also created CoWriter, a word prediction tool. For more information, go to www.learningtools.donjohnston.com. 4. TextHelp. TextHelp creates digital tools for inclusive learners and workers. Their products include Read and Write, a literacy tool that can support people with dyslexia by reading text out loud and by providing speech input and word prediction. They are also the makers of Equatio, a learning solution for math and science that allows math problems to be read aloud. You can find out more about TextHelp at www.texthelp.com/solutions/people-with-dyslexia. 5. Understood. Understood is a nonprofit organization that is a hub for people with learning and thinking differences. Their dyslexia resources include information on the signs of dyslexia at various ages, common myths about dyslexia, classroom accommodations and workplace supports, and a day in the life of an employee with dyslexia. Go to www.understood.org/dyslexia to find out more. 6. Made by Dyslexia. Made by Dyslexia is a global dyslexia charity led by individuals with dyslexia. Their goal is to train schools and workplaces throughout the world to empower people with dyslexia. They also provide resources that highlight the strength of dyslexic thinking. You can find out more at www.madebydyslexia.org. 7. CPen. The CPen is an AT device that scans and processes printed text, helping improve reading comprehension. To find out more, go to www.cpen.com. 8. Grammarly. Grammarly is an AT solution that provides assistance with spelling, grammar, punctuation, and clarity. It provides suggestions on how to improve written text. Grammarly offers a free and paid subscription. You can find out more about Grammarly at www.grammarly.com. 9. Ginger. Ginger is another AT solution that serves as a grammar checker, sentence rephraser, spell checker, and online proofreader. They offer a free and paid version. Get more information about Ginger at www.gingersoftware.com/accessibility. 10. Google Voice Typing. Google Voice Typing lets users type and edit with their voice whilst using Google Docs. This feature is great for individuals with dyslexia, as it allows them to focus on content without being bogged down by spelling and grammar.
This has been The Boyfriend Goal, written by Lauren Blakely, performed with duet narration by Erin Mallon as Josie
and Connor Crace as Wesley.
Produced by Tyler Whitlatch at Plunk Productions, with editorial management by Kara Hildebrand, business management by K.P. Simon, casting consulting by Audibly Addicted Productions, story and production copyright 2024 by Lauren Blakely Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.